show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Perspectives affiliate. Folks, we come to you in a somber mood this evening, for the Royals have officially been eliminated from postseason contention for the first time since 2013. So for the first time also since 2013, we can guarantee one thing, that there will be a new American League champion for the first time since that year. And since 2015, we can guarantee, I guess 2014, we can guarantee there will be a new World Series champion. So there's that. But before we truly dive into that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr. And with me, as always, is the somber but uplifting Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this this fall feeling evening here in Kansas City? I'm not sure if it feels similar there, but it's cooler.
Yeah, it's finally gotten past that kind of, like, 2 weeks ago it was like 90 something, like mid 90s in late September or mid September, and it's like, that's terrible. You know, I'm not somebody who sits there and counts down the days so I can go get my pumpkin spice latte and put on my Ugg boots. But, you know, I do there. You know, my favorite season is spring because, you know, it's a temperate weather. It's warming up after winter. You get, you know, March Madness, you get spring training, you get all that stuff. But I think fall would be second among my favorite seasons. It's just anything where there's not an extreme of weather, I think, is nice. And fall, you know, you can have like some 50 degree days, but it doesn't dip down into like super freezing and stuff. You know, I'm good with that. Today it was like 72, but it's sun's going down. So, I haven't been outside, but, I would say it's probably a little cool over here too. So that would be your Lawrence weather report.
There you go. Lawrence Weather from Michael Engel. The Weatherman. That'll be your new nickname, perhaps. Who knows?
Probably not, but
most likely not.
You can try, I guess.
We could. As I mentioned in the opener, the Royals have officially been eliminated from the playoffs. At this point, I think the only thing that the Royals are truly fighting for is a winning season. Which kind of one of those morale things, you know, you can look, and if you're the Royals in the offseason, you can look back and say, man, look at all this crap that we went through and we still had a winning season. We're still that good of a team. When we come back next year, full and healthy, we're really going to take off and never look back. So, you know, there is some value, I think, if you ask me, but if the Royals can win one of their next, was it five games left they have? So they're 81 and 70. Yeah, four games left.
So they're about halfway through tonight's.
Yeah, so one of their next 3.5 games they can win, then they'll have a winning season. And this would be their fourth straight winning season, which would be the first time since 1975 to 1980. That stretch, the Royals had six straight winning seasons. And since then, they've never had more than three. So the Royals could be the first time in, what would that be, 36 years that the Royals have had four straight winning seasons, and also the first time that they'd had even four straight 80-win seasons, because, you know, there could have been a year in there where the Royals went 80 and 82, and it wouldn't have been a winning season, but they still would have had 80 wins. So that's pretty impressive, you know, when you think about all the bad stuff, where the Royals have been, and then everything the Royals have gone through this year, and you know, they could still have a winning record. They've already won 81 games. So that's, you know, if you ask me, considering 5 years ago where they were, everything they've dealt with this year, I'm actually pretty impressed. You know, it's obviously disappointing because we're so spoiled now. So spoiled, these Royals fans. But for the last 2 years, you know, we've had literally the longest possible seasons that you could have.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome. But, you know, I'm still, when you take a step back, still think it's pretty impressive what they've been able to do this year, even though they're not going to come away with a November season like we have the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think I looked something. I think I saw a tweet. You know, I should have went and looked this up to verify it, but it was something like, it's the fourth straight year that the defending World Series champ has been eliminated from the playoff contention in the regular season, which, you know, goes to show you that, you know, there's one, a lot of parity, two, a lot of turnover sometimes. So for the Royals to get, you know, 4 years of, you know, the ascent, the peak, and this year, which is kind of the slight descent, I would say, which, you know, doesn't really rule them out for next year. You know, they might have a 5 year stretch if all goes well next year, which is pretty impressive. I mean, I think you look back at like that 75 through 80 stretch. I mean, the Royals went to the playoffs and like won the division four times and didn't, you know, they went to one World Series. They didn't lose it, or I mean, they didn't win it. So I think that you could maybe weigh the two with, you know, one team having a world championship versus, you know, the Royals, who just kept getting beat by the Yankees in October. to kind of look at it, I don't know. We can do that at a later time, I suppose, to really compare the two stretches. But I think we kind of alluded to it last week. Like, this is like the second golden era for Royals baseball. This is a new generation getting to see winning baseball from their hometown team. And, you know, to go through where they were, you know, the 100 lost seasons and Allard Baird, and to switch over to Dayton Moore and the years where it seemed like Dayton Moore was taking too long to get it turned around, to actually come up with a, you know, 4 year stretch of winning seasons, is, you know, it's pretty rewarding. It's nice to kind of have your team be in that position, especially a year like this year where, you know, you lost Moustakas and Gordon, and Wade Davis went on the DL twice, and Luke Hochaver missed the last couple months, and Joaquin Soria was inconsistent, and the fifth starter spot never really got settled, and Edinson Volquez regressed, and Omar Infante never panned out, and you ended up having to go to rookies. There was a lot of stuff that happened in this season. And the Royals, you know, they had that bad July, which we've talked plenty about. But, you know, they've really good odds to end up with 82 wins this year, which, you know, in a lot of seasons, 2003 comes to mind, 82 wins was an accomplishment. Like, that's a thing, you know, that's an outlier that sticks out as a good season. And so now, you know, the Royals are finishing it out. They don't really have much to play for. They're not going to finish second. They're not going to finish fourth. It's pretty safe to say that they're going to end up in third place, and the Indians have already clinched, so they're not playing for anything either ahead of them, and that's who the Royals play after tonight for the final three games. So it's just kind of like, well, you know, we're just kind of finishing it out. But still, you know, while it's not overwhelmingly positive and exciting like the last two seasons, even the last three, 2013 was plenty exciting, you know, it's still a moderately successful season, even though it's not to the standards that we Royals fans now hold them to, in our brief, you know, 3 year ascent to the top of baseball. You know, you look at it on paper, it's going to look like a letdown, and it is. But given the context of everything going around, you know, it's, you know, you get to reflect on it a little bit and thinking that, okay, it's fine. You know, next year, a lot of the same guys will be back, or should be. Ideally, everybody stays healthy. maybe give it another run and get a strong 5-year stretch that surpasses, you know, the clout of the first, you know, really strong stretch that the Royals had.
And you know, I was listening to Buster Olney on the radio my way into work today, and he was on 810, the Border Patrol, and they kind of mentioned the same thing. They're like, you know, this season is essentially over in terms of, you know, playoff hopes and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, next year, the anticipation is that the Royals will be back and they'll be competitive. And just they wanted to gauge his thoughts on it. And, you know, his response without hesitation was absolutely, you know, the Royals are going to be, he's like, it's not going to be that interesting in a good way for this offseason to think about the Royals for 2017, because there's obviously some holes that need to be filled and some things that need to be done to make them, you know, the most complete team they can be. But he said, you know, the more interesting thing is going to be 2017 to 2018, which we've talked about a lot as well. But just thought that was, you know, kind of from a national perspective, you know, it's not just the homerism in us that thinks, oh, this team's going to be back next year, you know, because we've been kind of been spoiled by the last couple. It's definitely a national consensus that, you know, the Royals dealt with some tough times this year. You know, they got some tough breaks, but there's still a ton of talent on this team. A lot of it's coming back next year. And there are areas, I mean, if you look at the possibility of getting Mike Moustakas back and, you know, getting a lot of the guys that you talked about that were injured and everything, you know, getting them back. Kane is healthy for a whole year. And then the arrow is still pointing up on guys like Danny Duffy, Jordano Ventura. You know, I mean, I feel like we've been a broken record with those two the last few years, but but it's still there, you know, which is a good thing because they're not a lost cause. But, you know, you want them to take that step forward. And if they take it next year, then it's going to be huge. But point being, overall, you know, there's still a lot of positives as we head as the Royals head into the offseason in just a few days here. And then, you know, another positive will be for the first time since 2013. You know, you can, however much this actually matters, you know, they'll be able to be a little bit more rested because of the offseason. You know, an additional 5 weeks of baseball the last couple of years, essentially, you know, has, I haven't gone back and tallied up all the innings, but when you guys got guys like Edinson Volquez last year, who not only set a career high in innings during the regular season, but then pitched through an entire postseason, you know, and you've got, and he pitched the most games, most innings in the postseason of all the starters. So, you know, things like that, who knows if he'll be back next year, but point being, there's not going to be another scenario for a guy like Ian Kennedy to possibly overextend himself, because we know he'll be back next year. So he's not going to get an extra 20 innings in the postseason, you know, that he didn't get in the regular season. So if there is a possible bright side, it could be that, you know, that they get an extra month off of the season that they haven't gotten the last couple of years. So I'd much rather have playoff baseball. The players rather have playoff baseball, but, you know, it can't hurt to have more rest.
If you're going to miss, at least you get the rest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they can be just, you know, ready to go, and more, maybe even more so than the physical rest. It might just be the mental rest. You know, you kind of almost felt like it at times this year, like when the Royals were really going good in August, when we thought, man, this team's back. They looked like that old Royals team, you know, the really sharp, really, you know, mentally strong team. But the rest of the season, just to me, and for whatever it's worth, it kind of felt, they didn't feel like that same team. Last year, it was the single most impressive thing, I think, from my opinion, was that you just, in 2015, there was such a sharp focus and a mental edge that this team had over every team that they played. And, you know, however much it translated into their actual play, who knows, you know, but you could definitely tell they came in, they didn't think like, oh, maybe we'll win or we hope to win. You know, they came in, we're winning this game. There's simply no way we're losing it. You saw it at different points during this season, but, you know, the majority of the season, it just felt kind of different. And I think a lot of that was because just the early in the season, the losses stacked up both on the field and off with injuries to, you know, Mike Moustakas, Alex Gordon, those things. Yeah, I think some of that kind of raised a toll, and then maybe put that on top of just the mental energy required of the postseason the last 2 years. Who knows? There could be something to that, you know. So there's they won't have to worry about that this year.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
They get to breathe easy, which they played so many games where they had to come back, and you know, yeah, they get the off season to recuperate, but still, you know, it's that's a lot to kind of go through. So I think they'll be fine for next year, and we'll see what improvements they make and what changes might happen. Their payroll's still going to be way up there, so they may not have a lot of wiggle room, but you know, they may feel like they don't have to make a lot of changes. They just need guys to get healthy. They maybe have an idea about second base and right field. Maybe they make a trade. I don't know. I mean, we'll evaluate that as the off season goes on and kind
of
see.
There'll be plenty of time for that.
Oh yeah. 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 We don't have to worry too much about that. But a lot of other things that kind of happened this season, you know, the Royals for the first time since 2000, they have a guy who hit 30 home runs. Last week we talked about how Kendrys Morales was on the cusp of that, and he finally did it. So you know, you get that kind of to point towards. We'll see if he comes back, probably gets him a qualifying offer. We'll see what he does with it from there. Eric Hosmer hit his 25th home run last night, and he's already surpassed 100 RBIs, so that's pretty significant for a guy of Hosmer's caliber who has that kind of face of the franchise player label on him. He gets to put up some nice round numbers like that, and you know, you wish the average was higher, but the power production is starting to kind of get there. And we talked a little bit before the season if it was going to ever be there, and you know, finally we see a little bit more of that. So those are two good things to kind of come out of this. And something we didn't really talk about before, and maybe this is just going to be a blip, but Jason Vargas has looked pretty good coming back from Tommy John surgery. So hopefully that puts him in position to be completely recovered when the time comes next year. And maybe that's one fewer rotation spot you have to worry about. You can have two solid innings guys, or at least one innings guy, and maybe Vargas is a 5 to 6 inning a night guy as your number four, and Ventura and Duffy can step up, you know. So that's something that we kind of got a glimpse at in this last month, is just seeing that, okay, Jason Vargas might be just fine. A lot of guys tried to come back from injuries, and Mike Minor never really got back, and Chris Medlin kind of fell down again this season after a decently average season in 2015. You know, it's you get a pitcher back, and a veteran pitcher at that, you know, it's it can't hurt for next year. So that's a kind of another late season positive that the Royals kind of got out of this season, is they got to take another look at a guy that they figure is probably going to be a big part of next year's rotation. So you know, hopefully he can continue to pitch well once he gets all, you know, all set up in the season, you know, through the off season and spring training, and there are no setbacks. Doesn't seem like there will be. So there's another kind of positive that came out of it.
And if you can, you know, look at it and say, if you assume that Edinson Volquez doesn't come back, which I think most indications are pointing, yeah, that's probably going to be the case. He's, and I don't
to take
know
a
that
significant pay cut after the season he's had. He's, yeah, I know.
I mean, he hasn't earned the contract this season.
No. He's shown signs and had stretches, but largely he's been really kind of bad. And you know, maybe it is fatigue. Maybe he wore himself down. But yeah, if he's back, it's going to be at a fairly cheap deal, I got to think.
I think maybe the only reason or the only way he might be back would be if the Royals just desperately want to get something for him, and so they offer him a qualifying offer and there's no other takers, and so he just signs it. And then he's back for $16.7 million or whatever it is. I mean, that's, you know,
that's a lot of money.
That's
though
more of a possibility than I would like to admit, given the Royals' history with, you know, trying to get as much value of things out of things as they can. So, you know, maybe it'll come to something where they can appropriately judge the market and say, okay, somebody's going to sign, somebody's going to give Volquez a 2-year, $25 million deal. So let's give him the qualifying offer. He goes and signs somewhere else, and then, you know, we get the draft pick. But
if you get the qualifying offer, I take it.
Yeah, because I don't know that
you. That's a lot of money for him to. And again, this, you know, for guys like Volquez, and we talked a bit about this with Morales, they've still got the mutual option to settle. That comes first, and so if they don't come to an agreement on that, he'll get a buyout for the option not being picked up, which I think is only like $2 million, but it still counts against next year's payroll. And so if they did offer him qualifying offer after that, you know, that's almost $19 million for the season that he gave you. I don't think they would make that offer. I think they would maybe try to get the mutual option, which is like $11 million or something off the top of my head. They might try to work that out, but I don't think they'd give him the qualifying offer. I think that's risky on their part, and they would want to avoid that with, you know, after the year he had this year. It'd be a heck of a payday for him.
Because if you think about how hard it was for someone like Irvin Santana to get a deal when he had a qualifying offer and he was younger and coming off a better season. So, you know, that's something where if you're exactly like you said, if you're Edinson Volquez and the Royals give you that qualifying offer, you're going to sign it because you probably only got 2, maybe 3 years left anyway. So you're going to try and float yourself out there and hope someone gives you a 2-year contract. I mean, if you can get a 2-year contract this year off of this season, he can get a 2-year contract next year, unless he just completely falls off the map, a la Jeremy Guthrie, which is, I don't know that would happen next year. So the smart, prudent thing for the Royals to do is to not give him the qualifying offer. Just let him go, and then if you really do want him back, you know, maybe if he goes through and gets no interest, then you can bring him back and say, hey, you know,
we'll give you
struggled
$7 million, you can come back and be your number.
Exactly. Give just like a nice small little deal that maybe incentive laden. So like, hey, if you have a season closer to 2015, then you'll make $15 million. But if it's closer to 2016, then it's going to be closer to $7 million. You know, that seems reasonable. And if you're 34-year-old Volquez, or if he might turn 35 next year, and however old he is, if that's the case, then, you know, I think it's reasonable to say, all right, I'll take that chance. Bet on myself, if you will, or if he will. But if you can – back to the rotation and talking about Vargas coming back, because he is under contract. So if you've got Vargas coming back, Kennedy's coming back, Ventura will be back, he'll be in the rotation, Duffy will be back and in the rotation, and then you've got Strom as a solid option. You mentioned, you know, Medlin. I don't know that I don't believe he's under contract for next year. I don't know if the Royals have interest in signing him, but I think it's a possibility.
He's interested. I would bet that'd be more of a minor league deal that he'd have to work his way back to.
And people love talking about Mike Minor, but he hasn't shown any indication that he'd be valuable.
He threw a couple rehab starts and he got shelled in them, and the shoulder never got any healthier. So I don't know if that might be sunk money in the end. Worthy shot, but yeah, it was. Didn't really amount to anything.
Yeah, and I think you've got Matt Strom has a really good shot of starting the season in the rotation next year. I think you do have to have a possible concern about an innings limit for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would probably be most beneficial for him to pull a Danny Duffy a lot from this year, where he could start out the season in the bullpen, pitch a month, maybe a month and a half in there, and then move into the rotation. You can kind of squeeze some extra innings out of them that way. But I don't know if that's what the Royals plan to do. I don't know if they necessarily should plan to do it that way. It'd be nice if they could, but I don't know if they'll have the options, because outside of that, you know, I don't know that they have much depth. They're going to have to go sign a starting pitcher somehow in this offseason, because I don't know that they have the depth. And that's another question. So we can kind of pose that question here. Yeah. Do you go out and sign a legitimate major league starting pitcher, or do you wait or maybe you sign a minor league deal or something, like knowing you have Matt Strom there, because you don't know if he's going to be available, or not available, but you don't know if he's going to be able to take that load right from the start, if he's going to be ready. You don't know. But then do you want to block him? Because if you've only got, if you assume Ventura, Kennedy, Vargas and Duffy, you know, do you want to block that fifth spot and then make it so that Strom can't get it?
Well,
what would you do?
I think it works out that if they sign a guy to be that fifth starter and he pitches well enough that it does keep Strom in there, that's not a bad thing to have. You know, you get to have a fifth starter who is competent and can hold it up. If they're not pitching well, then after a month and a half, then yeah, you'll know that maybe it's time to go to a guy like Strom and see what happens. It's going to be a rough market for starters. There will be some guys out there. I don't have the full list right now. I haven't really thought much about the pitching market for next year yet. So I think they'll try to sign somebody. That's definitely been the MO lately, and it's not like they've developed guys that fall into that spot. You know, you kind of thought maybe Kyle Zimmer would have a shot this year, and nope, that didn't happen. And Miguel Almonte, nope, he didn't work out. Guys like Alec Mills, who hasn't pitched well in the majors, but he's really only pitched like 3 or 4 games, so it's not really anything to look at. Jake Junis pitched well this year, but who knows where his ceiling is. I think they have to kind of have the idea that they're going to sign somebody, because you don't really have anybody that you can feel like you can rely on who would come up. Even Strom, who's pitched really, really well in his first couple months of big league action out of the bullpen, still not really somebody that you know how he's going to react throwing 4, 5, 6 innings every 5 days. Throwing 90 pitches a night. You don't know how he's going to handle it at the big league level. And so you can't go into it, expecting that. I think that's going to be a nice surprise, kind of like Duffy, where, okay, now we found this kid. And if that fifth starter is blocking him or he's not pitching, great, they've shown that they're willing to kind of float people around, kind of like Chris Young and Dylan G this year, where you just kind of, have a guy start a couple times. If he's not doing well, you go to the next one and kind of make that other guy the long reliever, the middle reliever, the mop-up guy, whatever. I think they would just as easily do that as anything else, depending on the guy they sign. If they go out and sign Rich Hill for some reason, well, then all bets are off. That changes a lot of things, but they're not going to do that. So I think it's going to be a kind of, market value number 4 or 5 guy, and they'll hope that Duffy and Ventura can be stars and that the other three can be average or better. And, if you get somebody like a Zimmer or Strom or whomever, great. That's a bonus. That's gravy on everything. You kind of make it work when you have to, I think.
Yeah. The Strom thing is going to be the most intriguing thing, just because, like you said, you don't know how he's going to react. So that'll be the one thing that I'm probably going to pay the most attention to once spring training starts, and seeing how he does and, the reports coming out of the camp. But of course, that, who knows how much that really means, because all the reports were incredibly positive on Yordano Ventura this year, positive enough to make me call for him to be a Cy Young finalist. And we all know how that turned out. And we, once the season is officially over, folks, we will get to reviewing Mike and I's prediction, none of which were outlandish or completely wrong. We were surprisingly right on absolutely everything. So
yeah,
look forward to that. Not even close.
Nailed
not even close
every
to being
single
right.
One of them. Yes.
Yes. We did do a spot review of the division winners as picked by all the writers and podcasters of BP Kansas City.
We didn't do much.
And as it turns out,
either,
both Mike and I picked the most right of all the division winners at 3 out of 6.
3 out of 6. Yeah. I think mine were all
interestingly,
National.
Interestingly, though, they were all different. I had two. Yeah, yours were in the National League. I had 2 American and 1 National. I only picked. I think I had two National League and one American. Yeah, that's because I had the Nationals and the Dodgers, and then I had the Rangers in the West for the AL. So
I had the Astros and the Blue Jays in the East.
I had the Yankees. East,
and then the Royals, obviously, in the Central, because why would the Royals not win the Central?
Of course.
You know?
Right.
What's going to happen?
They won by 12 games last year. How could they possibly not win this year? Jeez. But that's for our next
show.
We'll
do that next week. And
the season will be over by then. We'll have plenty to talk about.
Yep.
That was kind of some positives as we near the end of the season here. So we'll stop there and take our first break, and then we will come back. And we'll have some fun talking about some Royals memories that Mike and I have. So stay tuned for that.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Bo Jackson says hello.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Perspectives affiliate. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the break. And now, as we mentioned before in the commercial, we're gonna have a little fun with this as the season's winding down. We're going to talk about our first Royals game memory, like a true memory. So, Mike, I'll let you start. What do you got? What's the first Royals memory that you truly have for going to a game?
Well, the first game I actually went to, I was at an age that I don't remember it, and so that did make the exercise difficult. I tried to, like, my recollection, the way I've always remembered it, like in my head, the date that always sticks out is 1983. Not that I remember, oh, it was 1983, you know, because I was, you know, not even, you know, I was 2 years old through 1983. So I don't remember, oh, I know for sure it was, you know. So I asked my parents, and my dad thought, oh, it was 85, and my mom thought, oh, it was 82. I'm like, I'm sure you're both wrong. Couldn't find out what it was. They know it was in July. That's all we got. So I wanted to narrow that down. That might be something for later when I can maybe see like some photos or something and maybe figure out, okay, what was the actual first game I went to? Because I think that'd be interesting to know. All I remember is the seats vaguely, I think. Memory is weird and fallible. So maybe I'm just remembering or thinking that I remember that. I don't know. But the first game I definitely remember going to would be my second Royals game. And this was, I got the box score pulled up here. July 7th, 1989, the Royals played the White Sox. The Royals at the time managed by John Wathen. The White Sox managed by Jeff Torborg. It was a game started by Terry Leach for the Royals and Richard Dotson for the White Sox. And the Royals won it 4-2. There wasn't a lot memorable about this game, really. I mean, it's just some random middle of July game. But what I remember is that it was picture day. And, you know, for like a month before, the Royals did ads about, oh, it's picture day at Royals Stadium. It, you know, still was Royals Stadium back then. And, you know, I thought that's so cool. You know, I liked the Royals and liked baseball and was obsessed and everything. But I grew up in Hayes, Kansas, which now is about 4 hours from Kansas City. Back then, with speed limits and whatnot, I got to figure you're looking at 5.5, 6 hours. I mean, I don't know. I didn't go calculate it. But that's a long trip. And both my parents are, you know, blue collar types. So it's not like, you know, they can just pick up and go to a weekend in Kansas City. So this was kind of a thing that, you know, I remember we got the tickets and I put the tickets and they were on the fridge and I would just like walk by and look at the tickets and, oh, that's cool, we have tickets. And we went down. So we left the same day as the game. It was an evening game. You know, 7:37 is the start time that Baseball Reference tells me. But I don't remember what time we took off, but we got towards the stadium. And like picture day, I think, started like an hour before anything was kind of going to happen. It was a much bigger deal, you know, back even before 1989. But so we're basically taking the trip. And we went straight from Hayes to the stadium. You know, we didn't even go to the hotel to start off with because we were running behind. And my dad got lost. And I remember he couldn't find, you know, any of the streets or highways to get to the stadium. So what I remember is we're at the top of like a hill and like there's a sign saying Independence right by it. I'm like, I don't know what Independence, I don't know what any of these places are. I just know that at some point we passed the stadium and couldn't figure out how to get to the parking lot to get into the stadium. So we finally make it. We get in there. Our tickets are on the first base side. We screw up. We go to the third base side. So, okay, well, that's that's silly.
Rookie maneuver. Oh,
completely. But we end up finally getting to our seats, and we watch the game. And all I remember really is that George Brett left it early. It was like later into the day. And then there was one home run. And I thought that was kind of the one thing I wanted to see was a home run by somebody. Because, you know, I've thought about this. In 89, there was no baseball tonight. You know, Sports Center would show you maybe three baseball highlights, and then they would just show scores. They only had a half-hour show, and there was no ESPN News, and there was no MLB TV, and the Royals were really only broadcast, like, at least in Hayes. I don't know if it was more widespread in Kansas City at the time, but they only showed the road games in Hayes on the ABC affiliate. So really didn't get to see home runs that often. It was kind of like, that's kind of the cool thing to see. And the Royals were thankfully the team that hit the home run. But it was by a guy named Matt Winters. It was his first career home run. So that's kind of cool. Now, who's Matt Winters? Well, I went and looked a little further at Matt Winters. Matt Winters played one major league season, 42 games for the Kansas City Royals. He was an outfielder. He hit two total home runs. Once he left the Royals, he went and played in Japan, I believe. He was acquired by the Royals as a free agent in 1987 after being part he was a former first-round pick of the Yankees in 1978. So, you know, by the time he finally made the big leagues in 1989, you know, that's a heck of a trip for him to get up there and hit his first home run against the White Sox. And so Matt Winters is, you know, forever linked.
There you go. Learn something new every day.
Yeah. So, you know, and then we went on to the Red Roof Inn. We went to Worlds of Fun the next day. We didn't get to another Royals game until like 93. And then we went in a couple times in 94. And then, then it wasn't until I moved out this way to go to college that I started finally getting to go to more games, because I wasn't 5.5 hours away from Royals Stadium. And, you know, it was pretty cool. I wonder if I still have the ticket stub. I might somewhere. I hope I do, because 89 was like, that's formative year right there. You know, I was 8 years old, turned 9 that year. That was the first year. This game was just a couple days before the All-Star game where Bo Jackson won the MVP. So that is a, like, that is the wheelhouse. That this is the month where, you know, fandom went from, oh, cool, to I need to read all of the things about baseball. And has put me in this fated position now. So July 7th, 1989.
I'm there to hear.
A young Jeff Montgomery pitched. Bob Boone caught the game. Willie Wilson was a pinch hitter. It looks like Kevin Seitzer was in that game. You know, a lot of things going on. And, yeah, the Royals ended up missing the playoffs that year because of Oakland, who won 98 games and were eventually World Series champs. But, you know, it was a good year. And I remember it being a good game, though all I do remember really is the trip there and the home run. So I kind of wish I had more than that, but that's what I got.
Well, you've actually got more than I do, because my, I don't even remember the particular game. I guess I could go and try and see which one it was. But anyway, it was 1994, and, or wait, was it 90? Hold on a second. Now I gotta go check this out.
This is where this one I didn't remember what it was. I just remembered forever that the Royals had won 4-2 and there was one home run. And so I just had to go, okay, well, where did they, I knew it was the White Sox. So I was like, okay, who did they,
yeah,
when did they beat the White Sox? When was it 4-2? And then confirm it with the home run.
So it was actually, it was 93. And I know this because it was year. So the, I remember my dad, he came up to me and he was like, hey, do you want to go to the Royals game? They're playing the Texas Rangers and this is going to be Nolan Ryan's last year. So it'd be kind of cool. We'll get to see him. I don't even think he was pitching, but he was like, my parents, for the longest time, my parents and, they have like eight couples that they split four tickets with. So they're all four together and then they all just kind of split and rotate. So my parents go to like 10 games a year from their season tickets, but they're really good seats. So right, it's like front row right by the third baseline. Okay. So the way it used to be, it was the visiting dugout. So you could see the, so the, you know, right before the game, all the pitchers would walk from the dugout to the visit. I said visiting dugout, visiting bullpen. So now all the, back then all, they would all come out and go to, they would walk past third baseline and go to the bullpen. Right. So, so my dad was like, well, we can get there early enough and then we can, you know, we can see Nolan Ryan walk by. Right. So we can see that. That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So,
it's a pretty, so this was, larger than life guy.
Yes. So this was somewhere looking at the schedule from 93. Oddly enough, the Rangers had a 5-game series with the Royals at, it must have been like a, it was like a rainout or something.
There must have been. That's, not usual.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, because they had, look, they had a 2-game series in Kansas City in May. Yep, May 7th and May 9th. So there must have been a game on May 8th.
Rained out. Yeah,
that was rained out. So they ended up having a 4-game series and they tacked on another one. So, so I guess it could have been either one of those. I'm not certain where within that when it was. Let's see, Friday, probably the May one because that would have been. There was a Sunday game, so I would have been able to go to it. I would have been, what, 8 years old? So anyway, so my dad was like, okay, let's go. We'll go. We'll get there early enough, and Nolan Ryan will walk by, and it'll, you know, you'll get to see him. You can say you saw, you know, you were this close to Hall of Fame pitcher, one of the best pitchers of all time. I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Let's go do this.
Yeah, I'm in.
So we go to the game. And we're sitting there, we're waiting. I mean, we're there, you know, this is way ahead of time, right? So it wasn't something where, like, Nolan Ryan did autographs or anything. I mean, he's, like, 46 at this season. He's very curmudgeon-y at this point, I would imagine.
Sure. I don't know if there was ever a time where he wasn't curmudgeon-y.
That's very true. He might have been 26 and very curmudgeon-y.
Right.
But so anyway, he comes. It gets to be time to where all the pitchers go out to the bullpen. So he and the other pitchers come by, and he's kind of at the front of the pack, and he's got his little jacket on, and he's walking, so it's like my dad's like, okay, here it is. This is the moment. So he walks by, and we've got, those old. Do you remember those old? God, the real shitty cameras. They're like really flat.
Oh yeah, and with the little you push the little kind of window thing through.
Yeah, and you had the
and you wind it afterwards.
Exactly, and you had the the disposable flash.
Uh huh.
It was like six uses, and you plugged it into the top, and it was really obnoxious. So we had one of those crappy cameras, but it was like my camera, right? So my dad was like, "We'll take a picture with your camera."
Oh no!
So we roll up, and then he walks by. You know, we take a picture, and so then we get him developed. It actually turned out to be really good. I mean, it's just Nolan Ryan walking, but you know, it was really close. So
I thought you were going to say that he stopped by and you had the lens cap on it, or you had it blocked off or something.
That sounds about right, but that's not actually what happened. So we got the picture, and so it was something that, you know, we always looked at, and it was kind of that kind of moment you share with your dad. You know, today was Nolan Ryan, we got to see him, we got this picture, it was right in front of us. That was pretty cool. It was his last season. You know, last chance that you'd have to see Nolan Ryan in any capacity in baseball. So that was pretty cool. I don't remember the specifics of the game. I know Nolan Ryan didn't pitch, but I don't remember the specifics of the game. Outside of that, it looks like, let's see, that year the Royals won in May. They won the Sunday game. That's probably the game I went to, if I remember correctly. So, or no, I don't remember correctly, but that's probably the game if I had to guess.
Yeah.
And the Royals won that game 2-1. Well,
they played them later. It was the other series was in September, wasn't it? It was in 93.
They had one in late July, and they had one in September, but that was in Texas.
Okay, I'm trying to remember. So, I'm misremembering some of the timeline, because I remember that there was a game where Brett
it was actually in October.
And Ryan were both retiring, and so it was like a big deal that they were both in the same spot. But yeah, okay,
that was the last final series of the season.
Yeah,
against the Royals in Texas. So that's probably what
I'm remembering. I keep thinking, you know, there's that iconic picture of George Brett, you know, on the ground kissing home plate. I think I'm misappropriating that as the last series of the year when it was the like second to last, or maybe it was definitely the last home game, but maybe they had two games or two series after. Anyway,
well, it was the last series of the year for the Rangers, but it was in Texas though.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, that was kind of when you mentioned this as a topic, that was the first thing that immediately came to mind, just cause there's probably a bunch of like memories that all wash together from that period, but that's the first one that really like stuck out at me as something that I'm going to remember. And it kind of puts into perspective that historical feeling of, you know, that baseball has. There's just so much history, and there's so much more reverence, it feels like, of greatness in baseball. You know, I mean, I've been going to Chiefs games my whole life, and I remember so many Chiefs games so vividly, but I don't know that I ever remember a moment, you know, like that, where I was like, oh, you know, even last year, right? It's like Peyton Manning is the equivalent of Nolan Ryan for quarterbacks. And, you know, last year I wasn't like, man, I got to go see Peyton Manning on his final year. You know, it was just kind of like, it's just not the same. Like, so okay. That was... Yeah, exactly. It really it kind of put it into perspective for me at a young age, just the amount of kind of gravitas, if you will, that goes into baseball, which is part of what makes it unique and part of what makes it so unlike any other sport. So as far as first memories go, that's the first real one I had, was going to see Nolan Ryan in his final season here in Kansas City.
Well, I think that's kind of the interesting thing, is that neither of us remember a lot of particulars of the game. but we remember those kind of things, like, you know, Nolan Ryan going by. I remember someone hit a homer, and I thought it was cool that someone hit a home run. And that's really kind of what it was, because, I mean, at the same time, we're both, sounds like, 8 years old in the same time, you know, in our first games. So it's not like we're there yelling about why John Wathan went to Jeff Montgomery instead of sticking with the starter or something like that. You know, I didn't care. I didn't care at all. Steve Farr got the save. That's great. I really didn't know what a save was yet at that point. So, but I knew that, you know, it was a home run, and I knew that that was pretty cool. So, you know, I think that was a, yeah, I want to find what the first actual game was. I want to find that out and see if maybe there's any kind of significance about it. But that's going to probably involve, like, going and finding some 8mm tapes back home at the parents. And that stuff might not be, like, it might not hold up anymore. I don't know. Because I remember, there's the only thing I remember from that first trip is just that I've seen video. I don't think anything in the stadium, but we went to Worlds of Fun then too, because I know that there's a picture of me stuck in the corner of a bumper car, because it was, I was like 2 or 3 years old. It's like, why am I in a bumper car? It was a different time. It was a different time where I could walk, you know, 3 or 4 blocks away from my house instead of in a fenced in backyard as a kid. But That's what I'll have to do is go back and see, okay, how old really was I at that time? And maybe something will happen. And maybe I won't find out at all. You know, maybe all I have is this game at 89, but that's okay. You know, I remember enough of it, and the internet gives me the box score. And I was one of 37,464 there on that night.
There you go. And, you know, the rest, you can kind of fill in the blanks. That's the fun part. Have you ever seen the movie The Final Cut?
The Final Cut? No, I haven't.
You need to check it out. It's stars Robin Williams. Okay. So the premise is he has it was actually my friend Shane, who listens to the show. He actually recommended it to me a long time ago, and I bought it. It was so good. But the premise is that you can get this implant put into your brain, like in utero, right? That literally records every single second of your life. And then once you die, they take out the implant and they give it to these people called cutters, and they cut it up and put it and basically make your life a 2 hour movie. And then they have, it's called a rememory. And so then they play the movie. And then all the family comes and watches it instead of like a funeral service. You know, that's what you watch. So it's this person's life from first person. But anyway, the reason why I bring it up is because, like, afterwards of one of the rememories, somebody goes up to the Robin Williams character and he's like, hey, do you he's like, did you alter any of the clips in there? And the guy's like, no, that's absolutely against the rules, against our policies, all that kind of stuff. And he's like, are you sure? Because the boat in this scene, that this, because it was the guy's brother, he's like, the boat that we were in that particular memory, he's like, I always remembered it was green and it was red in the memory. He's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. We didn't alter anything, you know? And the guy was like, you know, his brother just died, but he seemed the most bothered by the fact that this boat was a different color. So, you know, that's kind of a sidetrack, obviously, but point being, you know, when it comes to like memories and stuff, it's always, you know, I think sometimes with this day and age, it's going to be so interesting to see how the next, I think a lot about how our next generation is going to develop, obviously, because I have a 7-month-old daughter, but it's going to be interesting to see, because they have everything like factually documented now. There's going to be pictures of everything. Yeah. Facebook, everything's stored, everything's forever, you know, but you know, that was a time where, I've got that picture of Nolan Ryan, you know, because I took it with the camera. But I mean,
it took
there's
you like a week to get that actual
exactly.
picture.
Exactly. I had to go to the store, and there wasn't even a 1 hour photo at the time. And so these things were, that's also a Robin Williams movie, by the way, 1 hour photo.
Heard of that one.
But, you know, so it's always kind of fun to you fill in the gaps, and, you know, there's no one to be like, oh, that didn't actually happen. And, you know, here's the pictures to prove it and all that kind of stuff. You just kind of that's part of the greatness of memories. You kind of fill in the gaps, and there it is. So I don't know. That was a sidetrack. Maybe I'm just rambling at this point, but that never happens on this show. So we know that's not the case.
Hey, they got a movie recommendation.
There you go. The Final Cut, starring Robin Williams. Go and Jim Caviezel.
Oh.
So definitely go see it. And Mira Sorvino, I believe, is in it as well. That's right. Yeah. So a couple Oscar winners in there. It's a good movie. You should go check it out. That's your homework.
It's the homework.
At some point this off season, right? You got to watch The Final Cut, and we can talk about Rememories.
Rememories.
Sounds like a good second segment for a show this off season.
Rememories, the Final Cut.
Yes, the Royals Rememory. We can remember, have a rememory of the 2015 season when they actually made the playoffs won the World Series, instead of the 2016 season where they did none of the above.
I've thought about that, about like how much I'm going to watch playoff baseball. Like, you know, it was pretty much watched everything last year when I wasn't, you know, actually at a game or whatever. But this year where, you know, my team's not going to be involved, it's like, well, it takes on a different meaning, and I'm not used to that. So that's kind of weird. So we'll see. I'm interested to see, like, the wild card if it ends up being the Blue Jays and Orioles. Like, I can't root for either of those teams.
No.
I can't. Not like, I could at least root for, like, Detroit if they got in it. Like, I wouldn't like it that much, but I could do it. So.
And Detroit is a game back right now of Baltimore and two games back of Toronto for the wild card.
Yeah.
And I think is every division is sewn up at this point. So
yeah,
just the wild card that's in jeopardy, or not in jeopardy, but in question. And really the only teams that have a chance are Seattle, Detroit, Baltimore, and Toronto. Seattle is three games behind Toronto, two behind Baltimore, one behind Detroit. So, I mean, you know, a decent swing in these four games could mean that, you know, any one of those four is in and any one of those four is out. But it looks like Toronto and Baltimore are probably going to take it.
You know, the Tigers have the Braves. The Orioles.
That's true.
Have to
that's
play
true. Tigers
the,
really open
the
up.
The Yankees for the last three games.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So that doesn't really work very well for Baltimore. They're fortunate to be in the lead right now.
Yes. So we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, I don't, I mean, if it's Texas, Boston, Cleveland, Toronto, and Baltimore as it is as of today, or even, you know, Detroit, I don't know, maybe Texas would be who I'd vote
that's who
out of those.
For. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really feel comfortable voting or rooting for a division rival, nor do I like the Red Sox or the Orioles. So, you know,
right. Texas whatever. Is fun. So they're a fun team.
They're a fun team. They're really well run organization. I admire how well they are run. And I will actually root for the Cubs to lose, not because I dislike the Cubs. The Cubs are just fine in my book. And I actually have a friend who's a really big Cubs fan, so it'd be cool for him if they won. But somebody made a point that I thought was rather interesting, kind of got me thinking, but I can't remember. It was on the radio. I can't remember who exactly it was, but maybe it was Sir and Petro, but that Major League Baseball wants the Cubs to lose because that's the best story in sports right now. They've gone so long.
Right.
There's all this talk about the curse. There's so many things that have happened to the Cubs. Like, think about the Red Sox now. You know, like, it was 2004 was a great story, because they broke the curse. They came back from down 3-0 to the Yankees, and they did all that. You know, in 2007, it was even still kind of, oh, that's cool. Now they've won again. Like, that's so awesome. But now at this point, it's just like, man, the Red Sox are just another Yankees
enough
or another Dodgers.
Already.
You know, they're not. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So no one's rooting for them anymore like they were. And I was rooting for the Red Sox in 2004. You know, it was fun. It was a fun story. So that's an interesting. It was kind of an interesting point. You know, if the Cubs win this year, then they're just another dominant team with a really big payroll. You know, there's no longer the lovable loser underdogs. But if they lose again, having the best record in baseball, then you know, it's still there. It's still out there. It's still a talking point. So I was like, you know what? That's kind of interesting.
Keep turning the knife.
That is kind of interesting. Exactly.
That's so cold.
It is, but it's also accurate.
Well, yeah. It's a story. It's a heck of a story.
It is a story. So with that, I think we'll leave you. We're going to still be here all off season. It'll start a little bit earlier this year, but we've got plenty of topics, plenty of things to talk about. If there's anything you want to hit with us, anything you want us to hit in the off season, let us know. Twitter, email, all the usual methods are open. We'll be maybe trying some new things, hopefully this winter, since we'll have some time. But we'll also have the winter meetings that'll come up in December, and we'll have hot stove talk pretty much right after the World Series is over, and that'll bleed into spring training, and next thing you know, it'll be 2017 season will be starting. So
it'll be here sooner than you could ever imagine.
That's true. And as of spring training, it will be, man, my daughter will be a year old, so that'll be really crazy. Really crazy. But
it's already flying by.
It's already exactly right. You know, there's so many things as a parent that you're just like, man, you hear other parents say it and you're like, oh, that's so cheesy and cliche. I'll never say that. I'm a parent. And then you end up saying it's just like,
you're like, wait,
like oh. when you were a kid and your parents said stuff, not about being a parent, but just about like being an adult in general. And then you're like, oh, it's so dumb. And then you're an adult and you say the same things and you do the same things. That's exactly how it goes. And you're just like, man, because we have this picture on our bookshelf of my daughter, like right after she was born, like the week we brought her home. And we're like, oh my God, can you believe she was that small? And she's like 15 pounds, you know, so she's really tiny still. But it's just crazy. So, you know, I always preface it to my wife when I say something stupid, like not stupid, but when I say something like that and I'm like, man, I hate to sound cliche, but here's the most cliche thing you've ever heard a parent say. So what are you going to do? You know, but with that, we will leave you. And like I said, we'll be here all off season. So stick with us. We couldn't do it without you. The listeners were so, so thankful for you guys listening and being involved in the show as much as you are. Really appreciate it. So keep doing that. We'll be here all off season. Got plenty of topics, plenty of things to discover, and plenty of things will come up that we'll be ready to talk about. Until next time, when the season is over, thank you all for stopping by. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.